And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is January 28th, 28th day of the year. 337 days remain till this year is over with. Well, this day in history, in the year 814, the death of Charlemagne, the first Holy Roman Emperor, brings about the accession of his son Louis the Pious as ruler of the Frankish Empire. 1069, Robert de Comines, appointed Earl of Northumbria by William the Conqueror, rides into Durham, England, where he's defeated and killed by rebels. This incident leads to what's known as the Harrying of the North. Now, that was a number of campaigns carried out by William the Conqueror in the winter of 1069-1070 to subjugate northern England, where the presence of the last Wessex claimant, Edgar Atheling, had encouraged Anglo-Danish rebellions. William actually paid the Danes just to go home, but the remaining rebels refused to meet him in battle, and he decided to starve them out by laying waste to the northern shires using scorched earth tactics, especially in the city of York, before relieving the English aristocracy of their positions and installing Norman aristocrats throughout the region. Another one of my ancestors. We got the lineage, we just don't have the money. Well, 1077, walked to Canossa. The excommunication of Henry IV, Holy Roman Emperor, is
motion detected at the front door.
Lifted after he humbles himself before Pope Gregory VII at Canossa in Italy. 1521, the Diet of Worms begins, lasts till May 25th. Now, that was an imperial diet of the Holy Roman Empire, called by Charles V, and conducted in the imperial free city of Worms. Martin Luther was summoned to the diet in order to renounce or reaffirm his views in response to a papal bull issued by Pope Leo X. In answering the questions, he defended his views and refused to recant them. End of the diet. That's D-I-E-T. The emperor issued the Edict of Worms, a decree that condemned Luther as a notorious heretic and banned citizens of the empire from propagating his ideas. Although the Reformation is generally considered to have begun in 1517, the edict signals the first overt schism. 15, now once again we have battles, disruptions over religion. 1547, Edward VI, the 9-year-old son of Henry VIII, becomes King of England when his father dies. 1568, the Edict of Torda prohibited the persecution of individuals on religious ground in John Sigismund Zápolya's Eastern Hungarian Kingdom. That was a rarity. 1573, Articles of the Warsaw Confederation are signed, sanctioning freedom of religion in Poland. That didn't last long. 1591, execution of Agnes Sampson, accused of witchcraft in Edinburgh. 1624, Sir Thomas Warner founds the first British colony in the Caribbean on the island of St. Kitts. 1671, the original city of Panama, founded in 1519, was destroyed by fire when privateer Henry Morgan sacked and set fire to it. The site of the previously devastated city is still in ruins. It's quite interesting to see, though. And Fort San Lorenzo, of course, which was defeated by Henry. All the cannons were thrown into the ocean, and you can still see them, and they're down at the base of the fort. 1724, the Russian Academy of Sciences is founded in St. Petersburg, Russia, by Peter the Great. It was implemented by a Senate decree. It's called the St. Petersburg Academy of Sciences until 1917. 1754, Sir Horace Walpole coins the word serendipity in a letter to a friend. 1813, Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice is first published in the UK. 1846, the Battle of Aliwal, India, is won by British troops commanded by Sir Harry Smith. 1851, Northwestern University becomes the first chartered university in Illinois. 1855, a locomotive on the Panama Canal Railway runs from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean for the first time. I've ridden that railway many times. It's a great sleeping place. 1871, Franco-Prussian War. The Siege of Paris ends in French defeat and an armistice. 1878, Yale Daily News becomes the first independent daily college newspaper in the U.S. 1896, Walter Arnold of East Peckham, Kent, becomes the first person to be convicted of speeding. He was fined 1 shilling plus cost. He was speeding at an unbelievable 8 miles an hour, thereby exceeding the contemporary speed limit of 2 miles per hour. 1902, the Carnegie Institution of Washington is founded in Washington, D.C., with a $10 million gift from Andrew Carnegie. 1908, members of the Portuguese Republican Party fail in their attempted coup d'etat against the administrative dictatorship of the Prime Minister, João Franco. 1909, U.S. troops leave Cuba with the exception of Guantanamo Bay Naval Base after being there since the Spanish-American War. 1915, an act of the U.S. Congress creates the U.S. Coast Guard as a branch of the Armed Services. 1918, Finnish Civil War. The Red Guard rebels seize control of the capital, Helsinki. Members of the Senate of Finland go underground. 1920, foundation of the Spanish Legion. It's a unit of the Spanish Army and Spain's Rapid Reaction Force. It was raised in the 1920s as part of Spain's Army of Africa. The unit, which was established in January of 1920, is the Spanish equivalent of the French Foreign Legion. Initially known as the Tercio de Estrajanos, name of which again fighting in the Rif War of 1920. And although foreign recruitment spans the Spanish-speaking nations, the majority of recruits are Spaniards. At one time in the French Foreign Legion, the French were forbidden from joining. All right. 1922, Knickerbocker Storm. Washington, D.C.'s biggest snowfall becomes a disaster when the roof of the Knickerbocker Theater collapses. Over 100 people die. 1932, Spanish forces attack Shanghai. 1933, the name Pakistan is coined by Qudrat Rahmat Ali Khan and is accepted by the Indian Muslims, who thereby adapted it further for the Pakistan movement seeking independence. 1935, Iceland becomes the first Western country to legalize therapeutic abortion. 1938, the world land speed record on a public road is broken by Rudolf Caracciola and the Mercedes-Benz W195 at a speed of 268.9 miles per hour. 1941, Franco-Thai War. Final air battle in that particular conflict. The Japanese mediated armistice goes into effect later in the day. 1945, World War II. Supplies began to reach the Republic of China over the newly reopened Burma Road. 1956, Elvis Presley makes his first national television appearance. 1958, the Lego Company patents the design for its Lego bricks, still compatible with bricks produced today. 1960, the National Football League announced expansion teams for Dallas to start in the 1960 NFL season and the Minneapolis St. Paul from 1961. 1964, An unarmed U.S. Air Force T-39 Sabreliner on a training mission is shot down over Erfurt, East Germany by a Soviet MiG-19. 1965, the current design of the Flag of Canada is chosen by an act of Parliament. 1977, the first day of the Great Lakes snow blizzard of 1977. It dumped 10 feet of snow in one day in upstate New York, with Buffalo, Syracuse, Watertown, and surrounding areas the most effective. 1980, U.S. Coast Guard cutter Blackthorn collides with the tanker Capricorn after leaving Tampa, Florida, and capsizes. 23 Coast Guard crew members are killed. 1981, Ronald Reagan lifts the remaining domestic petroleum price and allocation controls in the U.S., helping end the 1979 energy crisis and begins the 1980s oil glut. 1982, U.S. Army General James Dozier is rescued by Italian anti-terrorist forces from captivity by the Red Brigade. 1984, Tropical Storm Damonia makes landfall in northern Mozambique, eventually causes 214 deaths and some of the most severe flooding so far recorded in that particular region. 1985, Supergroup, USA for Africa, that's United Support for Artists for Africa, records the single hit We're the World to help raise funds for Ethiopian famine relief. Now, what's interesting is this whole group were millionaires, but they wanted everybody else to donate. They didn't want to spend their own money. 1986, Space Shuttle Program, STS-51L mission. Challenger disintegrates after liftoff, killing all seven astronauts on board. 1988, N.R.V. Morgenthaler, the U.S. Supreme Court of Canada, the Supreme Court of Canada strikes down all anti-abortion laws. Yeah, we just love to kill our unborn. 2002, TAME Flight 120, a Boeing 727-100, crashes in the Andes Mountains in southern Colombia. Kills 94. 2006, the roof of one of the buildings at the Katowice International Fair in Poland collapses due to the weight of snow. Kills 65 and injures more than 170 others. Well, there's a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, Joseph, Frina Domitiz, Julian of Cuenca, Thomas Aquinas, and Armenia, it's Army Day, and then Data Privacy Day. Okay, let's see what else we got. $10.99, the first Crusaders.
Motion detected at the front door.
Begins the siege of Hosn el Akrad in Syria. $13.93, there's a fire during the Royal Ball in Paris. Four die. It was called the Ball of the Ardents. Okay. 1495, Pope Alexander VI gives his son Cesare as hostage to Charles VIII of France. Pope Alexander VI was actually Roderick Lancol e de Borgia, one of the Borgias that had everybody so afraid. Let's see. 1561, by Edict of Orleans, French persecution of the Huguenots are suspended. 1581, James VI, who became James I of as King of Great Britain, signed the Second Confession of Faith in Scotland. 1689, the English Parliament passed a resolution that the throne was vacant. 1770, Frederick North becomes Prime Minister of Great Britain after Augustus Fitzroy resigns. 1787, Philadelphia's Free Africa Society is organized. 1788, Lord Gordon is found guilty of libel of the Queen of France. 1807, London's Pall Mall is the first street lit by gaslight. British statesman and founder of Singapore, Stamford Raffles, landed in Singapore on this date in 1819. 1848, the King of Naples granted his subjects a constitution. 1860, Britain formally returned the Mosquito Coast to Nicaragua. And having been there, it wasn't called the Mosquito Coast for nothing. 1878, the first telephone exchange went into operation in New Haven, Connecticut. 1878, George Coy hired as the first full-time telephone operator. 1881, at the Battle of Landsknecht in Natal, the Boers beat the superior-powered British. 1887, at Fort Keogan, Montana, the world's largest snowflakes are reported. Some are 15 inches wide and 8 inches thick. Now that's a heck of a snow, folks. 1887, on this date, work begins on the Eiffel Tower in Paris. The engineer and architect was actually Gustave Eiffel. 1914, Beverly Hills is incorporated. 1915, on this date, the first U.S. ship is lost in World War I. It was the William P. Fry. It was carrying wheat to the U.K. 1915, I said earlier the Coast Guard was created. They actually merged the U.S. Life Saving Service and the U.S. Revenue Cutter Service into one organization and called it the Coast Guard. 1915, Woodrow Wilson refuses to prohibit the immigration of illiterates. 1916, Louis Brandeis is appointed to the Supreme Court. He was nominated by President Wilson. 1916, the German colony of Cameroon surrenders to Britain and France. 1932, on this date, the German forces attack Shanghai. And for those that are into skiing, on this date, the first U.S. ski tow begins operation in Woodstock, Vermont. 1942, on this date, the German troops moved in to occupy Benghazi in Libya. 2, Navy Flyer Don Mason sent a very momentous message. Sighted sub, sank same. 1944, 683 British bombers attacked Berlin. 1945, General Vinegar Joe Stilwell on a truck convoy reopened the Burma Road in China. Or to go take stuff to China. In 1948, President Manuel Roxas granted full amnesty to all so-called Philippine collaborators, those who worked with the Japanese during World War II. In 1948, a plane crash in the Diablo Mountains killed 28 Bracero farm workers who were being sent back to Mexico. That inspired Woody Guthrie's song, Deportee. Well, that is the end of our history session for today. We've been talking about Civil War ghosts, and I got a few more stories that I've dug up. You know, in Cashtown, Pennsylvania, there's the Cashtown Inn, which is rather well known. While the Battle of Gettysburg was underway, just 8 miles away, the small town of Cashtown was transformed into a massive Confederate camp. General A.P. Hill used the inn as his headquarters as he sent his men under the command of Major General Henry Heath to the city of Gettysburg to get supplies. In fact, I think they were sent to get shoes that were supposed to be delivered for federal forces in Gettysburg. The inn was created in 1815 for the entertainment of strangers and travelers. The actual building actually dates back to 1797. Named after innkeeper Peter Mark's habit of only accepting cash as payment. Today, it's a thriving establishment, and the restaurant is known for its proximity to the battlefield, and of course, its ghost. Now, activity, ghostly activity in this location seems to be what you would expect. Doors open and close by themselves. The sounds of footsteps are often heard, and a playful ghost likes to knock on doors and walls. Now, there is some disagreement among aficionados as to who the ghost might be. Some say there were members of the family of the various innkeepers over the years. Some say they're soldiers who wanted to go back to the last nice place they saw before they died on the battlefield. And either way, they're extremely active, and visitors regularly have ghostly experiences. Interestingly, there does seem to be a unique type of spirit at the inn. The ghosts of several horses are said to appear outside the downstairs window. When in, they'll stamp their feet, waiting for their ghostly riders to show up, I guess. Then in Gettysburg, we have the Farnsworth House Inn, named after Brigadier General Elon John Farnsworth. This inn was built in 1810. It offers 10 rooms for tired travelers and historic Sweeney's Tavern for those in the mood for some good food and drink. General Farnsworth is known for the charge he made just after the famous Pickett's charge during the Battle of Gettysburg. He was killed in the attack along with 65 of his men. Confederate sharpshooters used the upper floor of the Farnsworth House to shoot at the enemy, and it's been proposed that one of them may have been responsible for shooting the only civilian casualty of the conflict. Her name was Jenny Wade. Once the battle was over, the inn was used as a hospital. For the ghost hunter, the Farnsworth House, the inn, is frankly a must-see attraction. And thankfully, they offer ghost tours for those who are interested in the subject. Actually, they offer multiple tours with multiple themes. As you walk through the house, pay special attention to the attic. It's said the ghostly sound of gunshots can still be heard from the snipers who were perched up there. And if you get the chance, make sure you see the basement. The spirit's often said to sing down there, and the apparition of a soldier can be seen carrying a wounded man down the stairs. In addition to this, there's a female ghost that folks call Mary, who's believed to have been a nurse. It could definitely be an interesting visit. Then also in Gettysburg, we have the Gettysburg Hotel, established in 1797. It's a plush getaway for you to stay in while exploring the history and hauntings that fill the city of Gettysburg. Much like the rest of the area, the hotel's embraced its haunted reputation and periodically hosts events for the paranormal enthusiast. During the Civil War, the hotel is actually a tavern by the name of the McClellan Brothers and uses a military hospital to assist those wounded in the nearby battle. It's a remnant of this period that's behind the well-known ghost in the Gettysburg Hotel. Name is Rachel. For decades, people have seen the apparition of a female nurse in various spots around the hotel. She's known to play with guests' belongings, mess up their beds, and even move the carts that were used for room service. And in addition to Rachel, there's a ghost that's been seen in the ballroom. She's decked out in 1800s attire and seems to be enjoying some ethereal music. And finally, there's a ghost of a Union soldier named James Culbertson who seems to be nursing a wound. It would appear he didn't survive that wound, but there's not a great deal more known about him. Then in Gettysburg, we have the Jenny Wade House Museum. Now, Mary Virginia, nicknamed Jenny Wade, was the only direct civilian death involved in the Battle of Gettysburg. She was at her sister's home on July 3, 1863. That's day three of the battle. Baking some bread for Union troops when a stray miniball came through the door and hit her. Sadly, that shot went straight through her heart and killed her instantly. And those who were there were so moved by the incident, she was later granted a military pension. She had been killed in the act of serving the Union Army. And there's not much to this story, but there's plenty to see and do in the Jenny Wade House Museum, especially if you're including all the ghostly activity that happens there. Often cited as one of the most haunted houses in America, tales of spiritual encounters are quite common with those who visit the museum. And there seems to be at least three ghosts on the property. First, there's the ghost of Jenny. She's seen and heard in the kitchen and most of the first floor. They say you know she's around when you smell either perfume or the scent of baking bread, which is what she was doing when she was killed. Then there's a male spirit that's been encountered a number of times. He also has a smell associated with him, the smell of cigars. Now, most believe he's a family member who passed away, but some have said he could be Corporal Johnston Hastings, Skelly, a soldier who was reputed to be Jenny's fiancé. He died just a few days after Jenny because of a wound received at the Battle of Winchester. And the last ghost in the house is that of a child. The second floor is where they like to play. People have heard childish laughter, and when toys are left behind, they get moved around as if the child or children are enjoying them. Then also in Gettysburg, we have the Tilly Pierce House Inn. Matilda J. Pierce was only 15 years old when the Battle of Gettysburg happened. She was staying in a nearby farmhouse that belonged to Jacob Weikert during the fighting, but it quickly became apparent that the battle was coming to them. Now, the farmhouse was perched at the base of Little Round Top, an area that became known for some particularly vicious fighting during the battle. Tilly Pierce quickly helped out with the wounded and assisted the doctors and nurses, who soon found themselves overwhelmed with casualties. She survived the battle and wrote a book about the ordeal. The Tilly Pierce House Inn is named for this heroic young woman, and it offered an upscaled experience from the standard bed and breakfast. With a 24-hour hospitality room and its proximity to the sites of Gettysburg, it makes a great start if you take a trip there. The attic of the inn is haunted with the spirit of a soldier who died during the battle. People stay on the second floor, often hear the heavy footsteps of the ghost walking over their head, and visitors have seen his apparition rock right through the door and into their room. This ghost is generally blamed for most of the things that happen there, such as lights turning on and off and items being moved and knocks on the door. Ghost hunters suggest staying in the blue room for your best chance to see or hear this particular ghost. Built in 1816, this historic home used to sit on the corner of Scott and Prince Streets, but it was moved to its current location on King Street in 1973. Originally, the house of William Wigg Barnwell. Now, this is in Beaufort, South Carolina, not in Gettysburg. My notes ran together. This house has had its fair share of bad luck. During the American Civil War, the estate was taken by the Union Army to be used as a field hospital. It's said that hundreds died there under the knife, and then, of course, there's been the more recent bad luck. Slated for demolition on a regular basis, the property's only barely been able to escape this fate a number of times. These days, the house has a new owner, one that seems to appreciate the history and style of the place. And the Wig Barnwell house is definitely on the upswing. Like most places, it served as hospitals during the Civil War, though. Some of the misery and bloodshed has stuck around. For decades, people have spoken about the haunting of this particular place. Seems that a few of the soldiers have decided to settle there in the afterlife. Visitors say there's ghostly footsteps heard, knocks on the walls, and items that seem to move around by themselves. In addition to this, there's a darker urban legend associated with the house as well. It states that a young woman once lived there when the house was divided up into small apartments and that she was murdered. The crime was never solved, and now she haunts the place till her killer is brought to justice. Her spirit's blamed for the odd female screams and moans and cries that are heard during the night. Hopefully, the new owner will offer tours of this house so folks can visit and have a look for themselves and experience the ghostly activity. And in Charleston, South Carolina, the Battery Carriage House Inn dates back to the early 1800s. It was originally designed to be a private home. It was bought in 1843 by Samuel Stevens and would change hands a few times over the years before becoming the Battery Carriage House Hotel. The city of Charleston was hit pretty heavy during the Civil War, and the hotel was battered more than a few times by incoming fire. Now, knowing all this, it's a little bit ironic the place would be bought by Union Colonel Richard Lathers. He expanded the property and renovated it, but he was ultimately driven out of town. After a bout as a brothel of sorts, it was called the Pringle Court during this period, it finally became what we see today. Now known as the most haunted place in Charleston by investigators, the Battery Carriage House Inn is a great getaway. They offer 10 rooms with various levels of opulence, with several of the rooms being known for ghostly activity. So if you want to stay in a haunted room, then consider rooms 3, 8, or 10. Room 3 is known for a lot of activity, including a glowing figure that appears and faucets turned on and off by themselves and cold spots that can be experienced during the night. Room 8, which is considered the more frightening of the three, is haunted by a male entity who appears at times with no head. He often moves the furniture around, is heard breathing heavily. Now, how he does that with no head is anybody's guess. And generally likes to visit with anybody staying there. Now, room 10 is known for a gentleman ghost who's been seen quite a number of times. He doesn't harass or bother folks, but simply appears and seems to be interested in what the guests are doing. So if you are there with your main squeeze and you're getting it on and he shows up, ask him for pointers. Then in McClellanville, South Carolina, we have the John Dupree House. Now, it's not really clear at this point in time if this location is open to the public or not. It was recently a bed and breakfast, but it appears that it may no longer be in service. You may have to settle just giving this place a passing look till it's opened up again. This historic farmhouse, which dates back to 1790, was once the home of its namesake, who happened to be a doctor in this area. When the Civil War came around, he joined the Confederate Army, saw the loss of the war, and came back to McClellanville to help the town recover. As with the ghost, it's rumored there are two within this particular home. There's a phantom young woman and the spirit of a young girl. They're presumed to be family members of Dupree who lived in the house while he was away at the Civil War. We know Ms. Dupree died shortly after the war in 1865, so it's entirely possible the adult female is actually Mrs. Dupree. As for the young girl, it's really not clear who she might be. It takes some investigation to figure out who the identity of this particular ghost, but that's part of the fun and excitement of paranormal investigation. Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, we have the Boone Hall Plantation and Garden. Listed on the National Register of Historic Places, Boone Hall dates to 1681 and one Major John Boone. He and his wife Elizabeth worked the plantation from the beginning, and today the place claims they've been continuously growing and producing crops for over 300 years. The main crop these days is strawberries, pumpkins, and tomatoes, and the estate offers the opportunity for people to come pick their own fruits and vegetables. In the years leading up to the Civil War, the property was owned by John and Henry Horbeck. Two men started a brick company, the Harbeck Brickyard, at that location, and supplied the building material for a lot of the area. And it was a prime target for the Union Army as they came through the area, destroying anything of value that could aid the Southern cause. And in addition to this, plantation was utilizing a fair amount of slave labor, so as you can imagine, it was a prime target. The current home located on the property was actually built in 1936. Within the house is a gallery of antiques and displays that cover the entire history of the plantation. So if you take the grand tour, pick some fruit, you might see a ghost or two. And there are, in fact, a number of stories about ghosts on the property, the most well-known of these being Amy or Annie Jenkins. The legend states the young girl rebuffed a young Native American boy in favor of a local suitor, and on her wedding day, she was shot with an arrow through an upstairs window. She managed to stagger down to the 13th stair on the staircase before she died. Now people say you can see the blood stain on the stairs and the apparition to the girl. Other spirits on the property include the young spirits of slaves working in the brickyard and the ghost of a Civil War soldier who's been seen taking a walk, and a second phantom soldier said to be seen inside the house. He seems to be removing a bullet from a comrade. Then in Union, South Carolina, we have Rose Hill Plantation, more formally known as Rose Hill Plantation State Historic Site. This antebellum estate was home to one William Gist, and is considered one of the finest examples of a pre-Civil War plantation. Now, Gist was the 68th governor of the state of South Carolina and one of the principal individuals involved in the state seceding from the Union. Interestingly enough, he supported slave labor. Though he supported slave labor, Rose Hill Plantation is one of the few working plantations in the area that managed to make the transition to a sharecropper style of work arrangement after the war. Sharecropper doesn't own his land, but he lives there and takes care of it and helps raise the crops. Today, the house is owned by the state of South Carolina and is open for tours, events, and visits. You might receive a visit of your own if you go there from the spirit of William Gist. With the family cemetery right on the premises, most people believe the ghostly activity within the premises is a product of the family buried nearby. Of course, William isn't the only one buried there. He's just the best known, regardless of who it might be. Rose Hill's known for disembodied voices, footsteps, and whispers that sound like they're speaking directly into your ear. And then, of course, on occasion, there's the pale apparition that's been seen in the window looking out over the once proud plantation. Franklin, Tennessee, which I've spent a lot of time at, got Carnton Plantation. Battle of Franklin, which took place November 30th, 1864, became apparent rather quickly there was going to be a lot of casualties. Due to the nature of the assault as well as the close quarters combat, a local hospital is going to be needed. To this end, the Carnton House was appropriated and hundreds are treated there. Four generals lost their lives during the Battle of Franklin, General Claiborne, Granbury, Adams, and Strahl. Their bodies are laid out on the back porch of the Carnton Mansion, while many of the troops who perished were buried in a small family cemetery close to the house. With this knowledge alone, it should come as no surprise the place is haunted. I was once there when, in Tennessee, a storm can come up very quickly. And we were being given a tour, and inside that house, which is massive, no way to tell that a storm was coming up. And they had just finished discussing the fact that the four generals were laid out on the back porch when there was a massive crack of thunder and everybody scattered and ran. Nobody seemed to really know what the sound was until we went outside and saw the torrential rain coming down. Where the bodies of the four generals were laid, the bloodstain apparently doesn't go away. Managed by the Battle of Franklin Trust, the Carnton Plantation is currently open to visit. Learned a lot about the often overlooked Battle of Franklin, as well as the McGavick family who built the house in 1826. When you take that tour, though, keep your eyes and ears open, since there's been quite a lot of ghostly incidents reported from the mansion. The spirit of a young girl thought to be a servant likes to move things around in the kitchen downstairs. There's a ghost of a soldier seen in one of the bedrooms. They think he died there when it was a hospital. There's a woman dressed in white's been seen in the yard and on the back porch. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot more ghost stories concerning this antebellum home than we have time for here. Also in Franklin, there's the Carter House. The second of our two properties, governed by the Battle of the Franklin Trust, the Carter House was constructed in 1830 by Fountain Branch Carter. I think I'm related to them. I've got an aunt by the name of Carter, or a great aunt. She operated a successful farm and cotton gin in the years leading up to the Civil War. During the Battle of Franklin, Union Brigadier General Jacob Cox took possession of the Carter House to use it as headquarters. It was kind of ironic since Todd Carter was an aide to Confederate Brigadier General Thomas Benton Smith during the battle. Todd didn't survive the battle, though. He was shot during a charge not far from his own home and brought there to die in his own bed. Much like the Carter House, this property is haunted by several apparitions, all who have been seen from the seem to come from the Carter family. The spirit of Annie Carter is known for playing pranks on those who visit the house. She pulls on their hair and their clothes, and she moves objects. There's the ghost of a little girl who's been seen on the staircase a number of times. Then there's the phantom of Todd Carter. His death cries have been heard in the bedroom where he passed away, and his specter's been seen sitting on his bed. If you have a tour of the Carter plantation, you might want to come here next. It's a great historical and haunted double feature. Then in Tennessee, we have Hurricane Mills, the Loretta Lynn Ranch. Well, this antebellum home is the centerpiece of the mini community of Hurricane Mills. It was bought, along with the entire town, frankly, in 1967 by Loretta Lynn, the popular singer, and used as her family home. She said quite publicly that almost immediately she and her family knew the house was haunted. They learned a Civil War skirmish had been fought in the area and soon found the graves of 19 Confederate soldiers buried nearby. In fact, it was the spirit of a soldier they first saw. His spirit was standing in one of the bedrooms. Now that's something to wake up to, let me tell you. Hurricane Mills, now a tourist destination in Tennessee, offers an RV park, campsites, museums, gift shops. And of course, there's the plantation house. Sightings of apparitions, as well as various other paranormal activities, been experienced at the ranch on a regular basis. The front porch is located over what's called a slave pit, where disobedient servants were placed for punishment and is considered a hotspot of sorts. People have felt invisible hands touching them, and many have experienced a mild electric tingling while they're there. The stairs inside the house also seem to be the site of a lot of happenings. Visitors to the house have claimed to see an apparition approach and pass right through them. Take the tour, mention your hunting enthusiasts, and you'll know a lot more about Loretta Wren's mysterious house than you would ordinarily. Then in Nashville, we have the Belmont Mansion. Originally known as Belmonte, this former home of Alicia Hayes Franklin Cheatham was finished in 1853. It's created in the style of an elaborate Italian villa, features a water tower, a greenhouse, and a zoo. Well, when her husband Joseph died during the Civil War, she was left to handle the family fortune as well as the massive estate all alone. She actually managed to broker a deal of both sides of the war when it allowed her to sell a massive amount of cotton to England, a move that secured her future. In 1864, the Union Army used the front lawn of Belmont as a camp during the winter. 13,000 soldiers spent a winter there. Today, Belmont Mansion is a unique living museum that offers tours as well as host events that you can go and enjoy yourself. Maybe you run into the ghost of Aunt Alicia while you're there. She is forced to sell the beloved home in 1887, and many say she comes back now that she's on the other side. Her apparition, decked out in a long dress, has been seen in assorted odd happenings usually attributed to her, such as motion detectors going off for no reason, objects being moved, etc. Then my favorite in Smyrna, Tennessee, is the Sam Davis home. Till I was about 17, every Thanksgiving there was a family reunion of my grandmother's family at the Sam Davis home. Now, what's even more wonderful than visiting in the well-kept historic home? How about one that contains over 100 original family pieces and furniture? Moses Ridley built this awesome place in 1810 and was renovated and expanded by Sam Davis in 1850. Civil War began. Sam joined the 1st Tennessee Infantry Regiment. Confederate regiment, don't you know? Fought in several key battles, including the battles of Shiloh, Perryville, and Stones River. 1863, Sam Davis was captured by Union soldiers near the small town of Minor here in Tennessee. He was charged with being a courier of mail and being a spy, and he was offered the chance to avoid the death penalty by divulging his sources of information. He refused. So on November 27, 1863, he was hung. His family home has become the living museum it is today, offering tours and a place for local events. I had my hand smashed in one of the cannons that sits on the lawn. As for the ghost, there appears to be at least two. The apparition of a young man, thought by some to be Sam, thought by others to be his brother Oscar, has been seen or heard walking the stairs and hallways to the house. There's also the ghost of a woman who's offered her crying in the parlor. And since this is where Sam was laid in state, it's generally thought the spirit must be a female family member who attended the wake. Then in Bedford, Virginia, we have Avenal, originally known as the William Burrell House. This circa 1836 house is known far and wide for its ghost hunter-friendly attitude. Indeed, many a paranormal group has cut its teeth at this location. Story of the Lady in White is one of the most well-known ghostly tales in the state, and countless articles have been written about her. Most believe the lady in question is the spirit of the late Mary Frances Burrell, wife of William Burrell. Legend states she was crushed when William was called to service during the American Civil War. And when he never returned, she lived the remainder of her life a depressed and lonely woman. Most sightings of the Lady in White involve seeing her apparition, either looking from a window or waiting on the front porch. Once you get past this particular ghost, though, the stories start to vary a bit. Many of the people who visited Avenal have claimed that there are multiple entities that inhabit the house. These vary from young children to spooky shadow people to even a ghost cat. Located in the historic district of Bedford, Avenal may be worth a visit, if you can track down the proper owners. An independent foundation was operating it at one point. At least you can swing it by while out on a walk. You just might catch a glimpse of the Lady in White watching you from one of the windows. In its Charles City, Virginia, we have Edgewood Plantation. Located just north of the James River, this 1849 Gothic Revival house is the jewel of Charles City. It, along with the nearby Harrison Mill, is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. Richard Rowland was the original occupant of the house and was the operator of the grist mill. On June 15, 1862, Confederate Major General Jeb Stuart stopped at the house en route to Virginia, and the top floor of Edgewood was used as a lookout of sorts by the rebels several times during the war. All right, sorry about this, we had a power failure. Luckily, my system saved everything. Well, now, Edgewood Plantation is a bed and breakfast today, but they do offer tours. If you stay there, who knows what you might see. Now, there are a number of legends concerning the old plantation. The most well-known ghost is said to be the spirit of Elizabeth Lizzie Rowland. She was supposed to have died of sorrow after her true love, a Civil War soldier, never returned. Her apparition has been seen in the window of the bedroom that's named after her. Other ghosts on the property include that of Aaron Young, a spirit who reportedly spoke to a pair of guests staying at the B&B. There's an entity who committed suicide on the staircase, and the spirit of a young child who's been encountered playing in the hall. And if you can manage to tear yourself away from the main house, you might want to arrange a quick trip out to the old quarters. Investigators have gotten a lot of activity at that location, and there's a ghost cat that's been known to make an appearance. And in Fredericksburg, Virginia, we have Chatham Manor. It's a Georgian-style manor house that was built in 1771 by William Fitzhugh, who was a very popular statesman in his day. It's one of the few places in the country still standing that once hosted President George Washington and President Abraham Lincoln. The town of Fredericksburg was a hotbed of activity during the Civil War. There were several major battles in the general area. Chatham Manor was used as a headquarters for the Union Army and in a field hospital during the Battle of Spotsylvania Courthouse. These days, the mansion is the main center for the Fredericksburg Spotsylvania National Military Park. So getting the chance to check it out really shouldn't be a problem. Now, catching the ghost in action might be an issue if you're not there on the right date. Seems that the infamous Lady in White only appears at Chatham Manor on June 21st. And then, it said she only appears every 7 years. Apparently, it's been that way since she died in 1790. Despite this, people do claim to get the odd bit of paranormal happening every now and then. Usually, folks report a whiff of perfume, the odd cold spot, or maybe an odd sound heard during the night. Well, in Harrisburg, Virginia, we have got the By the Side of the Road Inn. It's an interesting name for an inn. Once the home of Mennonite leader Bishop Peter Burkholder, this house was built shortly after the Revolutionary War in 1790. During the Civil War, it was used as a safe haven of sorts when General Philip Sheridan swept through the Shenandoah Valley, burning everything in sight. Makeshift hospital was set up inside to help the wounded, and a lot of folks came to the house to simply escape the horror they were being inflicted in the air. Thankfully, the house is nothing like that today, with the historic inn to visit as well as luxury cottages on the property. A trip to as always, everybody and their brother calls when I'm on the air. But as I was saying, a trip to the By the Side of the Road Inn is nothing short of pleasurable. Like most places once serviced as a Civil War hospital, the inn does seem to be haunted by spirits from that period. The apparitions of men in uniforms have been witnessed, and the odd sounds have been heard. Sounds like footsteps on the stairs, doors opening, knocks on the wall. Now, very little of the activity is said to be frightening. So if you want just a little bit of ghostly enthusiasm, this might be a tame getaway. Consider staying in the main inn on the top floor. It's said to get the most activity during the night. Then in King George, Virginia, is the Belgrove Plantation Bed and Breakfast. Now, the principal problem with spending the night at this historic B&B is making sure you're at the correct Belgrove Plantation. There appears to be two of them, and both are considered haunted. This version of the Belgrove is the one you can stay at. It dates back to 1791 and was the birthplace of President James Madison. During the Civil War, the plantation was under the ownership of one Carolinus Turner. Now, as a big Confederate supporter, he was driven away briefly from the estate, probably during the attacks at Fredericksburg, but he came back and was given a pardon for his loyalty to the South. And since Belgrove has been featured on paranormal TV shows, the story of the haunting there is apparently quite well known. They now offer ghost tours and quite friendly to respectful ghost enthusiasts who stay at the B&B. If you make the visit, you'll want to pay attention to a couple of different spots inside the mansion. The balcony seems to be where the apparition of a young woman is seen. The kitchen is inhabited by the spirit of a female African-American, and a ghost of a Union soldier has been seen in the house as well. Who knows who you might run into in the night. Leesburg, Virginia, we have Oatlands Historic House and Gardens. Now, established in 1798 by George Carter, this wheat plantation is the perfect example of a slave-driven business at the onset of the American Civil War. With over 130 slaves working there, it's little wonder that Elizabeth Grayson Lewis Carter fled the house when the war began. And when the war was over, the loss of the labor force there instigated a slow demise of the family's wealth. 1903, the house was sold to William and Edith Eustace, prominent family from Washington, D.C. This resulted in visitors such as President Harry Truman and Eleanor Roosevelt coming to the house. Now the Oatlands Plantation is a living museum and an awesome place to host an event. With the ornate gardens and year-round activities happening on the property, it frankly is quite the fun getaway. And as for the ghost, there doesn't seem to be a lot of details available. Called by those who've contacted him as the Man in Black, this spirit is known for various bumps and knocks and footsteps that are heard throughout the home. He's been seen on a few occasions, but most of the time the activity seems to center around odd sounds. And there's also a story about a second ghost at the house, a female spirit that appeared with the scent of roses. Now, she's said to appear at random and will often lock doors that were previously unlocked. Maybe she's trying to freshen up, just wants a little bit of privacy. Then in Middletown, Virginia's Belgrove Plantation. Not to be confused with Belgrove, located in King George, Virginia, this historic home is now part of the Cedar Creek and Belgrove National Historic Park. The first Belgrove is associated with the birth of President Madison. This version belonged to his sister, Nellie Madison Height. Built in 1797 by Major Isaac Height and used as a prosperous sheep farm for a lot of years. In 1864, the house was used by Union General Phil Sheridan as his headquarters during the Battle of Cedar Creek. Battle that historically helped secure the re-election of President Abraham Lincoln. Today, you can visit the park, you can take a tour of Belgrove, but you don't necessarily have to go inside the house to catch a glimpse of the spirit that is known to reside there. The apparition of a woman dressed in black is said to often appear in the windows of the uppermost room of the house. This ghost is a centerpiece of a legend that states that Nellie Height was killed by a slave named Millie who was having an affair with Isaac. When it was discovered what Millie had done, she was hung in the nearby woods, and now the spirits of Nellie and Millie are said to fight from beyond the grave. Both of them are said to haunt the house, though most believe the apparition dressed in black is actually Nellie Madison Height. Then in Petersburg, Virginia, we have Center Hill Mansion. Robert Bowling IV constructed Center Hill Mansion between the years 1818 and 1823. Bowling was a captain in the local militia and made his money dealing with tobacco. His son, Robert Buckner Bowling, would be owner of the property when General Longstreet made the mansion his headquarters during the Civil War. And later, when the Union Army moved in, the house was utilized by Major General George Hartsuff. In addition to these two historic figures, the mansion has also been visited by three American presidents, Abraham Lincoln, John Tyler, and William Howard Taft. Center Hill Mansion Museum now occupies the building. And like many other tourist destinations, it's decided to embrace its haunted history. In fact, the museum even offers a yearly ghost watch tour that's highly recommended if you happen to be in the area. So you might ask who they're watching for. Let's say that every year on January 24th, a phantom group of soldiers can be seen marching up the stairs at 7:30 p.m. 20 minutes later, this same group of spirits can be seen or heard coming back down and exiting through the front door. When it's not January 24th, visitors have noticed a ghostly woman that seems to be standing in an upper story window. She's been called the Lady in White, is seen more often than the spectral soldiers who parade up and down the stairs. Once the home of Confederate Brigadier General Albert Gallatin Jenkins, this next place is known as, was built in 1835. It's known as Green Bottom. Today, it's a living museum and operated by the West Virginia Division of Culture and History. It's listed on the National Register of Historic Places and is open to the public. It's well known for their yearly Civil War camp and holiday party that occurs close to Christmas. Also known for two other things, General Jenkins and the ghost of General Jenkins. It's in Glenwood, West Virginia. The living General Jenkins served two terms in the U.S. House of Representatives during the Civil War and fought at the Battle of Gettysburg. He was wounded during the battle, but would recover and continue to fight. Be at the Battle of Cloyd's Mountain that he would be mortally wounded and die. And it seems that after he died, he went back to love the Green Bottom home that he cherished. Sightings of his apparition have occurred in the house, and his spirit is generally blamed for things going missing or doors at Sunday open and close. Well, this is going to be our last Civil War-related show for a while. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll be talking about more haunted locations. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.